Hi, book lovers, and welcome to Book Talk Radio Club. My name is Claire Perkins, and today I'm talking to David Vidsett. As a Scotland Yard investigator, David Vidsett has worked on a wealth of infamous cases. He's chased down numerous dangerous criminals, placed bugs on scores of vehicles, searched hundreds of properties, and interviewed thousands of witnesses. David is the author of The Theseus Paradox and A Detriment, the best-selling D.I. Jake Flanagan series based on real events. I can't tell you the truth, but I can tell you a story. Hi, David. Thank you for coming on Book Talk Radio Club.
Hello, Claire. It's an absolute pleasure.
Thank you. Truth is stranger than fiction. You say you can't tell us the truth, but you can tell us a story. I have a funny feeling that the two are in fact the same.
But the reason I have a trademark saying I can't tell you the truth, but I can tell you a story, it's all to do with the Official Secrets Act.
Right.
I've spent 20 years in the police service. Much of that was spent investigating organised crime and terrorism. And I spent a long time working with the security services in this country and both abroad as well. The Official Secrets Act says that I cannot tell you the truth, but as long as I call it a story, and I don't say it's the truth, then the official Secrets Act can't interfere with my rights as my artistic rights. Mm-hmm. How much is truth and how much is fiction, I leave it up to the reader to decide.
Fair enough.
That's where my saying comes from.
Tell Book Talk Radio Club listeners what the Theseus Paradox is all about, please.
It's about the aftermath and what led up to the 7/7 bombings.
Right.
Was the London bombings the greatest criminal deception of our time? Was it really just religious fundamentalism, which is what a lot of people think, or was there at the hand of organised crime behind it as well, and who was involved? That's really what the book is about.
Right. A character needs to be likeable in order for readers to connect with their story. D.I. Jake Flanagan, is he mostly you or an amalgamation of colleagues you've worked with?
If I was an actor, I'd be telling you that I'd do all my own stunts. and that's very, very much really what Jake Flanagan is about. Everything I write and everything I talk about is spoken from an element of personal experience.
Right.
There is an element of truth in it. In terms of him, he's very much based on me on an emotional sense, a professional sense.
Right.
He's an interesting character. You know, do all our characters in books have to be very, very likable?
Mm.
Are all our heroes whiter than white? Jake is he's very much one of these people who's like, you'd want him on your side.
Right.
But perhaps would you want him standing by your side as a partner? He's that sort of character.
You were a lead investigator on the July 2005 bombings in London, often referred to as 7/7. Did writing the Theseus Paradox help you mentally and emotionally deal with the aftermath of the 7/7 bombings?
Yes, indeed. As police officers, it doesn't matter what department or specialism you work in. We become used to dealing with traumatic events and dealing with difficult emotions. And we are all just normal people. It was cathartic. And what I actually found was when I sat down and started to write about my experiences and write about what I'd been through, that I found that there was a lot of things that I'd bottled up, internalised, hadn't really dealt with properly.
Mm.
And then when you sit in a lonely room and I start to put these things on paper, you suddenly realise that things do have a really big effect on you.
Sure.
And you are still quite emotionally upset, and I found myself quite a lot being very, very upset about some of the things that I didn't even realise were causing a problem for me.
Yeah, I can imagine. The greed of mankind is truly voracious, as is the ability of the greedy to manipulate others to increase their power. Without giving away the end of the story of the Theseus Paradox, the front cover of the book states, "What if London's 7/7 bombings were the greatest criminal deception of our time?" Do you think the greed for power and money is behind most of the big cases you've investigated?
I think that we view terrorism very much as the media paints it, the media paints the, you know, religious fundamentalism, you know, Islamism, and certain sort of terrorism that we see here, mainly in this country at the moment. It's a very one-sided view. It's a very simple, one-dimensional view of what it is. Mm. And yet, yes, I do think that there are people that have a hand in these things. Organised crime has a hand in them, and that there are vulnerable people with mental health problems, and people who, you know, for whatever reason, they've lost their parents or whatever, and they find themselves in vulnerable situations who are exploited.
Mm.
And organised crime, you know, it has this ability to cross lots of different things. And I think when we, in the media, give us a negative view, you know, you look at anything that's happened, especially over the course of this year in the UK,
mm.
you know, you look at that Manchester bombing, you look at the two attacks that we've had in London. Mm. We only ever see what we want to see, and we see this face of Islamism as the issue. And I think, you know, what I've learned is actually very different.
Right.
There's a lot more going on. It's much more complex than we realise.
Yeah, I think so too. I agree. Over the years as a Scotland Yard investigator, you've experienced the very darkest side of humanity. Do you believe there is such a thing as pure evil, and if so, why?
It's a tricky question. I think that the scale of evilness, is probably the best way to describe it, is a very subjective one. At one end, you know, we could have somebody who perhaps cheats on their partner, and a lot of people would see, you know, that was not evil. And at the other end of the scale, you would see, you know, they're more murderers.
Mm.
You would say they're pure evil. But I think when we actually take these things back, none of us are born evil. None of us are born to wrong other people. None of us are born to be difficult to
Absolutely.
Others. But I think that as we go through our lives, you know, especially childhood, things happen to us and to all of us, and it shapes the way we are. It shapes our emotional intelligence, the way that we interact with others, the way we interact with our world. And then we become difficult, and perhaps we become evil. Perhaps we're motivated to act in certain ways because of what's happened in our past. And if you look at the one end of the scale where you've got the Moors murderers, and everyone would say yes, they are pure evil. But what's happened in their background is, could you feel any sympathy for them?
Yeah.
About what's happened in their past. I don't think there's such a thing as pure evil, but I think that there's the thing where what's happened to somebody, you can either sympathise with what's happened to somebody to make them, set them on this journey, or you cannot. And it's a very subjective test.
I think it's a point, there comes a point where people make a choice and either go one way or the other way. And personally, I prefer to live in the light.
Well, no, exactly. But, you know, the whole thing about right and wrong, you know, what is right and what is wrong.
Mm.
Again, that's very subjective, and you know, I'll give you an example of something. It's like, you know, if you just look at somebody, you know, a man has he's got a knife and he's gone and stabbed somebody in the street, and you would say, well, the man who's done the stabbing, the murdering, killed somebody, he's the evil man and the other man's good. Mm. But then when you actually look into the background of what's gone on, what the argument is about, what has driven this man to stab this other man.
Mm.
We become very confused about what is right and wrong when we start to understand the motivations and the emotions behind it. And if we find out that actually the man has been stabbed with a child abuser, and the man that had done the stabbing is the father of a child that's been abused, the whole idea of right and wrong becomes very confused.
Absolutely, absolutely. You recently published your second novel, The Detriment, again featuring D.I. Jake Flanagan. Can you give Book Talk Radio Club's listeners a brief idea of the storyline?
It's about what's behind the Glasgow airport attack. I don't know if you remember, there was a blazing jeep in 2007 driven into the airport, and there was a man, you know, who was on fire, who was tackled by a police officer. It's all about wars. It's a simple extremism. And what was it that was going on in the background that we don't realise? The Detriment is also a follow-on directly from the Thesis Paradox, my first book, and we see Jake's mysterious girlfriend Claire, turning up again.
Right.
And we find out a lot more about her, and we find out a lot more about Jake Flanagan.
So we get to know more about his character in life and the detriment?
We do, yes. I think one of the things that, that I didn't realise when I first started writing and when I penned my first book is how much readers really wanted to understand what motivates the character and what sets the character on his path, and pretty much what we were talking about just a moment ago.
Yeah.
And Jake isn't, as I said before, he's not a vanilla sort of character. He's somebody who has lots of things that have gone on in his background. He's somebody that's driven in a very personal way to do what he does. He does break the rules. He doesn't play by the same standards that a lot of people expect him to. I think in the second book is, I was sort of set on a path by what some of the people said from the first book. I felt I needed to explain why he behaves in the way that he does and what motivates him. So we find out a lot more about Jake, more about his background, yes.
I see it's already receiving some wonderful reviews. Congratulations. In your opinion, what are the successful ingredients for a great crime thriller?
Well, obviously anything with the name Bide set on the front is the question for me. I don't know, it's a difficult question. What makes a great crime thriller? People want to imagine themselves in the roles that they're reading about. When I went out to work on July the 7th, it was just an ordinary day. I had a life going on. My first daughter wasn't very old. My second daughter was about to be born. We suddenly find ourselves in these incredible situations that we're thrown into, and we're just normal people. And I think what makes a great book is when you get to understand, you find ordinary people in extraordinary circumstances and how these ordinary people deal with those extraordinary events.
Absolutely.
And how they impact on their lives, on their personal lives. When I think about all the great books I've read in the past and what I actually remember about them, I don't really remember, I'm talking about crime books now, I don't really remember, who murdered who, how the detective solved the case or whatever.
Yeah.
I think what stays with me is what's going on in the character's personal lives and the circumstances that's going on in the personal lives. And I think that's what you get from my books is you find this very ordinary person, like I am, or like Jake is. And you find somebody in an extraordinary circumstances and they're doing extraordinary things, and people like to know how that impacts upon their personal lives and how it affects their relationships. And I think that's the difference between a good book and a bad book.
You work with the Police Defendant Trust. Well, what is the Police Defendant Trust and how are you involved?
The Police Defendant Trust is a charity which looks after police officers. It was set up after a number of police officers were killed a long time ago.
Right.
On a number of charitable donations were given, and they have started a charity in order to deal with it. But going forward, I help them with a thing called the National Welfare Contingency Fund, which is a fund that's set up specifically for police officers like myself who found themselves in a national event. Our mental, and they help us deal with our mental well-being. Sometimes, as I said before, we deal with things in a very professional way, and we look like we're on the level.
Yeah.
Picking up body parts or dealing with victims who are crying or whatever.
Mm.
We're dealing with very, very traumatic things. We go away and think we're okay, and often we're not.
You're not made of stone, you're still human beings.
That's right. And it takes a long time for those emotions and feelings to come out, because police officers become very well, very good at just putting these things in a box and then storing it away in your subconscious and say, I'll deal with that at some later stage.
Yeah.
But a completely normal event might suddenly bring that box to the fore, and suddenly you've got all this emotional baggage that you've not dealt with.
Yeah.
Um, And the National Welfare Contingency Fund gives the ability for the Police Defenders Trust to set up a care package for police officers who are finding it difficult. You know, police officers like me who had difficulties in the past, and they can give them a very tailored care package. And it's really important that police officers know that there's somewhere for them to go, because one of the themes in both of my books is the fact that the police service are very bad. They're very bad at looking after their officers, especially their mental well-being. Mm. You know, they were seen very much as numbers. We're seen very much as somebody thumbs on seats to go and do things, and they don't really give too much thought about what's going on in our lives or what we're experiencing. So it's important that if there are any police officers listening, you know, there are people that can help you. And the Police Defender Trust is one of those, and say there is a national fund set up directly for national events, and that's what I help support with my books.
Very good support. So why writing now instead of investigating?
Sorry, say that again.
Why writing now instead of investigating?
Well, I loved what I did. I really did love what I did. There comes a stage when we've got to, you know, we need to move on. We need to do other things. Mm. And I absolutely love what I do now. In some ways, I don't feel I've really ever left the police. I spend a lot of time looking for investigations, reading about investigations, and commentating on them in the media, writing about them in the newspapers, and informing, you know, readers and listeners about what's going on in investigations, how the police are going to be doing certain things, and then where the investigation might go, and about what the motivations behind it are. Right. And to be honest, you know, I have the best of both worlds now.
That's good.
I've got this fantastic life where I can dip in and out of investigations and look at, you know, the most serious things, and I don't have all the humdrum that goes with the everyday policing.
Sure.
You know, that's where I am.
What's next for David Radsett?
I suppose I've got a lot of things going on. Obviously, I've got my third book, which we spoke briefly about before, where we see Jake working abroad, which is something that I did. Mm-hmm. And we see him working out of his comfort zone. I mean, Jake's comfort zone, and perhaps mine, was very much working in the UK, and understanding how things ticked here and knowing exactly how things worked. But suddenly when you find yourself working abroad, and your organisation, your government, however you want to look at it, are putting you in a difficult circumstances and asking you to do things that perhaps, let's say, that aren't strictly legal, and you're working outside your comfort zone. So we see Jake doing that, and we see him working on a huge investigation, which I'm really excited to be sharing with people. I'm looking forward to that. That's coming, and that'll be out at some stage next year. I'm trying to aim for the middle of the year.
Right.
I'm also working on a documentary about a real life unsolved case.
Right.
Case that's happened in the past. And I'm hoping to be in a position to perhaps solve that case, and make that into a documentary and perhaps a factual book.
Brilliant. So where can Book Talk Radio listeners purchase The Theseus Paradox and the Detriment?
Well, you go on to Amazon. It's exclusive to Amazon. If you go on there and look me up as Lawson, you'll see both my books.
Right.
You can buy paperbacks and buy the digital books on there too. And if you want a signed copy, I do sign copies via my website, which is davidbarnsett.com.
Fabulous. Okay, thank you, David. That was fascinating. Please come back on Book Talk Radio Club when you've published book number 3. I'd love to chat with you and hear more. In the meantime, good luck for the future. And thank you, everyone, for listening to Book Talk Radio Club. Thank you, David.
Thank you, Claire. Thanks.
Okay, bye now.
Bye.